This is not a coincidence because many Arab regimes and especially feudal kingdoms entered the American Zionist plan to forget Al-Quds. Why did they have to forget Al-Quds? Because it is the third holiest place in Islam. And on the other hand, by forgetting this holy place, the task of colonization becomes much easier. But this is why the Islamic world and the nations, independent of their governments, do not cope with this issue and are not happy that a place with this sanctity in Islam is under the control of the Western powers and their military tool, the regime of Israel, In this regard, Quds Day reminds the world, especially the Islamic world, that this place is the third holiest place in Islam and is not limited to Palestinians. For this reason, the fact that the last Friday of Ramadan every year is a reminder that there is a holy place in Islam. Nations ask themselves, why should the Palestinians defend it alone?
Si este es un lugar sagrado de todos los musulmanes del mundo, ¿por qué los palestinos tienen que defenderlo solo? Sí, pero ahí es visto también como de los musulmanes en general, pero también, ojo...
Yes, but it is generally considered a place for Muslims. But it should be noted that it also belongs to other West Asian nations. Christian people and non-religious people also defend it as a symbol of fight against colonialism and occupation, which are promoted by Western Europeans. The issue is confronting the Zionist regime, which... contrary to their imagination, has never been chosen. They are the occupiers. Even from a cultural point of view, Quds Day means collective defense of Al-Quds. I believe there is a force that motivates everyone.
Al-Quds. Yo creo que tienes una fuerza que motiva al conjunto de los pueblos.
Claro.
Es que el Quds es la ciudad de Jerusalén.
Al-Quds, or Jerusalem, has two important centers. First, from a religious point of view, there are two very important symbols for Muslims there. But we must not forget that all Christian historical tradition is also there. Now, a very important process that you mentioned is taking place. You explained it well. The Christian world has its own instructions and prayers, and from the cultural point of view, the Christians of Palestine gave their culture to the Muslims, so there's this cultural chain connection that is from the East, and suddenly a completely diverse Western culture appears there, which is completely destructive. This culture is very far from the characteristics of the Eastern culture. This Oriental culture is not specific to Palestine and West Asia only, but it also reaches the Far East because the Arab and Ottoman empires existed in West Asia, Central Asia, and multiple in this region.
Asia Central, o sea, hay una cultura que se masificó en toda esa zona.
Así es, incluso.
Yes, that's correct. There are even celebrations of the International Quds Day from Caracas to Paris. It exists in all the capitals and important cities of the world. We'll take a break and be right back here with Nicola Areva.
Una pausa y volvemos inmediatamente acá con Nicola Areva. Regresamos con Nicola Jaua acá en nuestro programa Negro y Blanco. Nicola.
We are back here with Nicola Areva in Black and White. Nicola, why don't you give us your opinion about the importance of World Quds Day in this current situation? A situation in which Zionism and the Zionist regime, as the tip of the West's arrow, are committing murder, destroying a nation in the Gaza Strip, and committing the genocide of the Palestinian nation-state.
Es contra el pueblo, nación palestina. Eduardo, el caso hoy en día cobra ribetes mucho más importantes que nunca en la historia.
Eduardo, this case is more important today than at any other time in history. First, the current situation is not caused by October 7. Its history goes back much further. And the importance of goods is not only due to the Eastern religious and cultural issue, it is also important for Westerners and especially for Zionists. They're trying to take control of Al-Quds and have been preparing for it since long ago. The reason is economic. Jerusalem Al-Quds earns about $30 billion a year in religious tourism. Obviously, in the Zionist world, the Jews consider this to be their own. They never had any love for Christ and the Christian religion. They said that Christ was not a clergyman. So what are the interests of Zionism in controlling Jerusalem Al-Quds? Nothing but $30 billion of religious tourism income. On the other hand, they had a well-prepared plan. The first thing that they did in Quds was to destroy a cemetery that belonged to the Prophet's era, and many people from the Prophet's era who were buried there had their graves destroyed. Why did the Zionist government do this? They did this to see the reaction of the Islamic world to this great aggression.
This is an attack on the whole world because it is anti-culture and anti-civilization and anti-history.
They actually measured the reaction of the Arab nations with this issue as well as the reaction of the Arab governments, but they saw that the Muslim nations responded with anger. But there was another plan behind the scenes. This plan was prepared by the CIA and Israel's Mossad. They wanted to see how the press, mainly in feudal kingdoms and Arab dictatorships, could suppress their own nation in response to this very important issue of destroying the history of the Prophet of Islam. For example, one can never imagine that one day a Christian cemetery with all the people of the time of Christ will be destroyed. If this happens, the Christians will react strongly. This was the first issue. The second issue was the control of Al-Quds. For this, they had the support of the feudal countries and the dictatorships of the Arab world, and the Palestinian nation was resisting. Now, if Zionism can establish its control over Quds and in this way enjoys the company of feudal and traitorous kingdoms in many Arab countries, then the Palestinian issue will lose its main essence. Because if you pay attention, the heart of the struggle to defend Palestine is the issue of defending Jerusalem Al-Quds. They want to take away the flag of the resistance struggle, which is the recapture and protection of Islamic holy places. The Islamic movement has power in the Palestinian nation. Today, the Islamic Jihad, Hamas, the Popular Committee of Resistance, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, constitute the Palestinian nation. Among these groups, three groups have progressive Islamic tendencies.
Pero tres de esos son de tendencia islámica progresista.
Sí, pero ojo. Fíjate que aquí una situación bien interesante.
Yes, but we must note that there are interesting conditions here. I have seen pictures of Hamas members taken with Christian symbols. This is becoming a Palestinian national issue. And as you say, well, the fate of Quds is the fate of the Palestinian nation. That is why they do this dirty work and want to destroy the structure of Quds, which has Arab-Palestinian roots, and give it a Western face. This is what Zionism is doing today.
Darle un carácter occidental de acuerdo como lo está haciendo hoy día el sionismo. Bueno, hay una apropiación cultural originaria.
Yes, the Zionists are trying to take ownership of this deep-rooted and rich culture. For example, they've tried to make Palestinian food culture their own. We see that in Europe and even in Chile. They say that falafel, a local Israeli dish. But Israel doesn't have local food because they come from Ukraine, Russia, Poland, Moldova, Argentina and America. I don't know a food culture that is multinational. So what they did here was take over Palestinian food culture and present it as Israeli food culture. Eduardo, this is not a coincidence. Zionism wants to turn all these different nations into one nation and create a nation state. Zionism finishes the work of the Jewish religion and turns it into a national nature, destroys the universality of the religion, and limits it in a territorial area. With this, the first enemies that Zionism currently has are Jewish religious people. There is the Neturei Karta organization and other organizations that fight against irreligious Zionism because it is destroying the Jewish religion. Therefore, if they do not have Jewish and Christian religious roots and they're not Muslim, then why should the Zionists seek to take over Jerusalem and Al-Quds? It is very clear. They want it there for billions of dollars of religious tourism money. Unfortunately, what some feudal kingdoms have done is that an evil character who happens to be the son-in-law of Donald Trump, named Jared Kushner, has employed certain businessmen from the UAE and Saudi Arabia in joint businesses, and they have proposed to create a hotel system in Quds, Bethlehem, Jericho, and Ramallah. This work was proposed by Kushner's initiative for the future of Zionist capital. On the other hand, Jared Kushner brazenly announced that it wants to create a tourist center in Gaza in the future. They want to turn Gaza into a place like the Caribbean. Finally, all this can be summed up in one word: wealth accumulation. Everything is summed up in this. But the survival of the Palestinian nation is not for the purpose of amassing wealth, but in resistance or martyrdom. For this reason, the Palestinian nation is fighting. They're fighting in a way that no nation has ever fought like this in history, except in the case of Stalingrad in the Soviet Union. Similar events happened with Gaza at that time. There is no better historical example for Gaza than the Stalingrad of Palestine. Now, as the defeat of the feudal kingdom and traitorous Arab states and the clarification of the issue for the Arab nations, today's situation has made it very clear that the struggle of the Arab nations begins with the freedom from the dictatorship of the feudal kingdoms, and this is how they can enter into a transformation process in West Asia. We see that the most terrible and disastrous dictatorships in the history of mankind, which the West supports. And the interesting thing is that all the things that they unfairly attribute to Islam and everything that they use to distort the image of Islam in Arab countries, such as the treatment of women in those countries, the treatment of women is very terrible. These actions are carried out exactly by the allies of America and Israel. In Iran, women are respected. Women have a high participation in parliament, universities, scientific centers, health, and armed forces. It is the same among the Palestinian people. Women fight side by side with men and take up arms. In Syria and Iraq, we see the same thing.
Lo mismo el pueblo palestino, la mujer luchando junto a su hombre, codo a codo y con el arma en la mano. En Siria, en Irak.
La Turquía es de 60 segundos, un minuto.
60 seconds, 1 minute for your last talk about Quds and the current anti-Zionist struggle at the global level.
Antisionista a escala mundial, ¿por qué no decirlo?
Un mensaje para los pueblos árabe, musulmán, islámico.
I have a message for the Arab, Muslim, and Islamic nations and the free nations of the world. All I can say is that if Zionism and America can defeat the Palestinian resistance, which will never happen, it means defeating the third world nations, defeating humanity, defeating honor and defeating respect, and defeating humans and mankind, and the nations of the world will plunge into a period of terror. Tolerating what is happening in the Gaza Strip and not coping with it first means the suicide of all international organizations. I mean the United Nations, the International Court of Justice, the International Criminal Court, and certainly the whole of humanity.
En definitivamente a la humanidad.
Así es.
Yes, that is right. The issue of Palestine is the issue of the whole world. Nicolás Areva, thank you very much for being here with us in Black and White.
Será hasta una próxima oportunidad.
No, I thank you. It was a pleasure for me to be present in such an important program.
Thank you, Nicola.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special, And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Arab English Radio, old ladies from all around the world. Welcome back to your own program, Muslim Lady. This is Asma. I have the honor to be your host once again. Yes, welcome to your own program. As usual, we're going to talk about the issues that are related to all the women out there. And in today's episode, we have Sister Nahid with us to help us with the topics. Assalamu alaikum, sister, and welcome.
Assalamu alaikum to you and all your dear listeners. I'm so glad and pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you very much for being here. How are you doing?
Good. Everything is going okay.
So that's perfect. So the great people and the greatest scholars have always talked a lot about women, and the way they look at women is very important in different societies and in different communities, because they are setting the foundation for the society to grow in a better way, to grow in their improvement, actually, and to flourish. When it comes to the Islamic Republic of Iran, then the two greatest scholars and, of course, the prominent leaders of this Islamic Republic, as Ayatollah Khamenei and Ayatollah Khomeini, both have got so much of words regarding women. In today's episode, we're going to actually cover some of their words and some of the points of views they have regarding women.
Yeah. First, I'm going to start with Ayatollah Khomeini, the founder of Islamic Republic of Iran, who held a strong beliefs about the role of women in society based on his interpretations of Islamic teachings. Women were a symbol of divine beauty in Imam Khomeini's thoughts, as he also had a close connection to his own wife. And we have too many narrations, too many stories, too many memories in his books. As you know, he was also a great writer, both of them.
Exactly.
Imam Khomeini and
poet,
Ayatollah.
A great poet.
Exactly. And also Ayatollah Khamenei, they write too many books that are just like role models for our young generation.
Exactly.
And women are just the symbol of divine beauty in the view of Imam Khomeini and in his relation to his own wife as well.
And also he has a book, Ayatollah Khamenei has got a book which is so nice about human beings entirely and generally, like the 1,000-year-old human. That's a very beautiful book, just as a side note for everyone who's interested to go and search for that book and get some more of information about that. It would be so nice to read that book.
Yeah, and you know what fascinates me the most is that Imam Khomeini connects women and defines women using the keywords of dignity, the origin of the good, bravery, and that women have a major influence on the destiny of themselves and also their society.
Of course,
it's like he sees the woman as the center of the leading of society. It's like they are the center of the source of the good, actually.
Yeah, and the source of inspiration and the source of every good thing that might happen to a society is a woman.
Yeah,
because with her is all the soldiers that are coming up in the next generation, and with her breeding is that the new scholars sprout in society, or great individuals would appear and contribute to their own societies as great individuals.
Yeah, and it is so nice. You know, it's like against the odds. In the Pahlavi time, there were a lot of people who were trying to like destroy his books, like not let his words be published. But when we go deep into the details of what he was saying, we find some just fascinating words. Like he clearly mentioned and stated that women are not going to be against men, but they're going to be beside each other.
Mm-hmm.
And even this single sentence can pave the way for life, like can pave the way for too many young people who are arguing with each other over, I don't know, girls not working, or boys being the most responsible person in the world, girls being dependent. And even his single sentence can be a teacher, can teach us a lot of things. And he was the one who was mentioning that women have a significant responsibility in all aspects of life, like personally, like emotionally, like being the supportive one, in the family. And this is so beautiful, like going into what he has mentioned. Although there are a lot of people out there, a lot of sources out there who are fake, who are just saying untrue stuff to kind of change the mindset of the new generation,
yeah.
We still have these great treasures that can teach us.
Exactly. And there is one very famous quote from Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, that said, it is from the lap of a woman that a man start their journey to the heaven and to salvation, which is so beautiful and so deep, coming out from the mouth of a great leader and a great scholar. There's a lot more of detail to it, but let's go for a short break and then we'd come back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Well, welcome back again. This is Muslim Lady. Sister Nahid and I are talking about the perspective and the point of views of two great scholars and leaders, Islamic leaders in Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Khomeini Rahmatullah Alayh and Ayatollah Khamenei. So we actually covered a bit about Imam Khomeini, who talked about women as being the engine of the society. She is the one who's going to actually nurture the coming generation. She is the one who is contributing to the society for the flourishing and the betterment of the society. And then I guess you have some more to add.
Another point that I'd like to mention about Imam Khomeini is that when he was talking about the women's role in the society, like after the revolution, when he was just building the government, when he was shaping the country again, like reshaping the country.
Yeah, and redefining the laws and everything.
Yeah, exactly. At that time, when he was just considering the social presence of women after revolution, he completely focuses on the identity and dignity of the Muslim women from the viewpoint of the Islamic context.
Exactly.
Like, he believes that women should be out there, their dignity should be regarded, their identity should be recognized by all people in the society, and they are going to be held responsible for some areas of the society. They are going to play a role, which is not going to be something that is not that much important. The women are going to play the significant role in ruling the society, in governing the society.
Mm-hmm. They would have a major contribution and a crucial contribution to society.
And
of course, we can see it right now. After 40 years of the revolution, we could see that clearly, that how many doctors who are women, even we have now pilots who are women. So this is a matter of pride, really, how women have flourished as time went by.
Yeah, and it's so nice that in this society, after the revolution, it was like a tree being planted at that time, and
exactly.
Now we can see the results growing.
The fruits, you can see the fruits. It's very interesting for those people who feel like, according to Islam, women are to be held up in the houses.
Yeah, limited.
Like they have no contribution in society, they have no active role in society, they're not going to achieve anything as an individual. But the Islamic Republic is going to show the counterexample to what people try to actually show out of Islam.
Yeah, it's
try
like
to
a
depict
picture of the Islamic society.
Exactly. In which women grow and they can speak up and they have their own rights.
And it's okay. It's even they are asked to play this role. They are not forcing the society to accept them. They are recommended, they are suggested, they are supported by the society and by the big leaders of the country.
Exactly. They can take part in the parliament, they can have different political roles in society, as we can see right now. So let's cut it into a break and then we'd be back to see the rest. Welcome back. Still, you're listening to Muslim Lady. Sister Nahid is helping us to know more about the detailed point of views of the two greatest scholars and leaders of the Islamic Republic. We're all ears.
Researching into Ayatollah Khamenei's beliefs and ideas, we can draw to some conclusions that are very nice and very useful, very helpful, especially for the youngsters, you know, especially for the ones who don't have much information about our leaders. And it's needed for them. It's like they need it for their own improvement.
Exactly. That's, by the way, there is a website that is called Khamenei.ir. And there's a lot of information about him personally and about his lectures. Like, there's actually a lot of information that you can get from that website.
Too much information. Yeah, and when we just get into his beliefs and the way he's defining women's role, either in society or in life, we can find the quotes and the words that he has clearly stated that women should be, first of all, he has mentioned it a lot in a lot of cases, that women should be equal, like women and men should be equal. Like, he is also seeking equality between the genders.
Yeah.
He is also fighting gender discrimination. And it's really nice. The things that sometimes we label Islamic societies with, like, they are not going to seeking this.
They just accuse them of being so biased about women, but that's not
while
the truth.
While our leaders are just fighting for this, just like the opposite.
Exactly.
And he describes women as frontiers of spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he mentions that women are the one in the first line of fighting the evils, fighting the bad deeds, and they are gonna the spirituality and the good vibes to the family, and women are the ones who are spreading the good vibes to the world.
And also, he has some gatherings with women, like successful women or even mothers get to a gathering in which he talks to them directly. And then those sessions are so beautiful. Like, even he has some gatherings with poets, and in those sessions also, he actually talks to some poets that are women, and that's so interesting how much emphasis he puts on the strong role of women in society as mothers, as I'm saying, in different branches, like even the poets, even to the women who are a great business women.
Yeah, and it's so nice that, you know, there are the signs of him playing and acting based on what he believes in.
Exactly.
He's not just gonna say, like, yeah, I'm gonna agree with women having roles in the society and then act in the other way.
In a different way.
Yeah, exactly. He is just going with what he believes in. And
exactly.
It's really nice that we started a revolution. We made our own country this way. And we had a leader who was just supporting women. And right now,
who acts according to his slogans. And mantras,
and right
actually.
Now, we still have one great prominent leader who is still there for women, who is fighting for women, who is talking for women and acting for women.
Exactly. And I'm telling you that even right now, he holds these sessions, and when he talks about women, it's as if the women are the center of attention.
Yeah.
And it really is like that. He puts too much of emphasis on the role of women as mothers and as active individuals in society.
Another nice thing is that he is kind of having updated information about women. He's talking about women being responsible for their wealth, being independent.
Exactly.
There are some updated issues, and he's still going on with this nice belief.
Exactly. And by the way, I should say that in Islamic Republic of Iran, there's a huge list of laws that advocate and support women's rights in marriage, in the businesses, in education, everywhere. Like, there are some details that are just mind-blowing. Like, it's so interesting that in our religion, every single detail has been taken into an account.
Yeah.
So, time is flying so fast, while there's a lot more there to talk about. Unfortunately, this was all the time that we had for today's episode. Then for more information, you can visit Khamenei.ir. And also, there are some other web pages out there. Even in IRB English Radio, there are different programs that you could go and visit to have some more information. So thank you for staying with us. Until another session, I just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
For something. to happen to me. But this waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
عليٌ حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge with Sheikh Mukhtar on IRIB English Radio.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wassalatu wassalamu ala Sayyidina Muhammadin wa ala Ahli Baytihi Tayyibin At-Tahirin. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of a guide for managers based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are currently focusing on the 185th sermon, and this is one of those areas where Imam Ali alayhi salam tries to draw our attention towards an important issue that can face the society, and that is to be engrossed in blessings and become forgetful about the duties that are necessary to be executed by each and every member of the community. And once these blessings become many, they can lead to certain side effects. So a community needs to be prepared on how to deal with these kinds of blessings. How should a person, prepare himself and the society to combat these difficulties? So those difficulties are that a society now, because of those difficulties that come due to extra blessings and not being able to kind of plan for those blessings in the right way, lead to backtracking of the society sometimes and can be very dangerous. Inshallah, we shall discuss about what are those difficulties that a community can face.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Oh,
If you remember in the previous session, we talked about the fact that when the blessings become too much, the material forms of blessings, when they are multitudinous, then one of the dangers is that we can have a society which is divided, whereby the rich become richer and the poor remain to be poor, and sometimes even become poorer. Why? Especially this happens when the wealth is not distributed well, and there is no proper planning and organization in place to be able to do that. So firstly, this has to be given very much attention to. But sometimes, even if these systems are in place, people do not abide by the law, and they become corrupt, and they, you know, tend to bypass all of these systems to achieve their material objectives. So this is a problem that can be faced, and these are the things that actually lead to the backtracking of the society, and the society sees that, for example, their aims are not being achieved because of the fact that now people are more focused on enjoying life, on just spending without any proper order, and therefore, you know, this society ends up to be just a materialistic society in the rights, if you want to say, and it can have other effects in the future. And we have seen that happening to the societies in the past also. When the communities become affluent, then they become forgetful of God, and then they become forgetful of what they need to achieve as servants of God. Now, apart from that, there's also another effect that can affect the society, and that is that people themselves can become spoilt. They can suffer spiritual harm. Inshallah, we shall discuss about this in the coming segment.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Sayyid Razi, also known as Sharif Razi, a religious scholar and theologian, holds a significant place in Islamic history for his invaluable contribution to the compilation of Imam Ali's profound teachings and speeches, which were later compiled into the influential literary work known as Nahjul Balagha.
Now, it is completely natural that people, when they see a lot of wealth, they kind of get excited about that wealth. They want to spend it in different ways, and they want to just achieve an affluent life. I mean, this is something that people normally dream about. And this is, we need to be realistic. Many people, unfortunately, in the world, they are materialistic in their mindset. I'm not saying most people, but many have that idea. But they should realize, firstly, that primarily it is not wrong to think about material progress. And even if a person likes it, likes the glitter, liking it by itself is not bad. Being attached to it and not being focused on spirituality because of these things is what is not encouraged. So therefore, a person should ask himself sincerely that why does he want or she want to achieve this material affluence. Now, many times when communities and people face these material blessings, they dive into them, and when suddenly their material their material wealth and their material state becomes vast, they forget other things. They get so engrossed. Al-mal wal-banun zinatul hayat dunya. Because wealth and children are the beauty of this world. Right? And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made it as a test for us, you know. Zayyanna ma 'ala al-ard. We have made beautiful that which is on top of the earth. We have made it look beautiful, rather. Zayyanna. It looks beautiful. And then he says, Inna ja'alna ma 'ala al-ardi zinatan laha. We have made that which is on top of the earth a beauty for the earth. Linabluwakum, so that we can test you. You see, so these are some things that we need to keep in mind, that if we take these as a test, then inshallah we can overcome and we can easily be able to balance our lives in a way that we can also achieve our spiritual goals. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar in the program Gate of Knowledge on RIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معناه باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمناه هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي رباه.
Çoğman. Yani?
Bazaar.
If you look around, nearly every object you see is made of raw material extracted from a mine. Basically, if you can't grow it, you have to mine it. The extraction of minerals, metals, and fuels from the ground is one of humankind's oldest industries. Never more than now has society been so dependent on greater variety and larger volumes of mined products. So it's no surprise that mining fuels our modern world and makes economies grow. Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. I'm your host Ali Reza Ikhtiarzadeh, and this week we will be exploring the mining industry while shining the spotlight on the machinery used in this sector. We wanted to see what types of machines are used and who is actively manufacturing them. Plus, we wanted to understand why the mining sector is crucial to the national economy and how manufacturers contribute to its progress. So, let's roll out the show. Our quest for answers led us to Shahrud City in Semnan province, where we visited a company specializing in manufacturing various mining machines. With nearly 20 years of experience, this knowledge-based company is active in a host of fields. It conducts research, development, and production of equipment needed in various industries. That being said, it also manufactures a variety of excavating, drilling, trenching, and digging machines. The life of any product begins in the design room. This company has researched and developed these machines and has perfected their performance. Optimizing the machine size, speed, and power to carry out tasks has also reduced the expenses related to projects where these machines are used. These machines can be used in agriculture and road maintenance, among other medium-scale construction projects. Most materials needed to make these machines can be purchased inside Iran. Steel sheets, gears, wires, and whatever else is required to build the machine can be domestically found. And if a design requires a particular part, This company can make its own molds to create the parts. You might find it interesting that these machines are currently imported as there is a high demand among mining companies for equipment. So, indigenizing the production of mining machines has been a big step towards supporting this sector. Another benefit to local production is it saves the country millions by cutting back on imports. The beating heart of this knowledge-based company is its research and development department. Here is where all the magic happens. This area employs some of the most talented and experienced specialists to research, design products, and optimize existing ones. But that's not all. The research and development department also studies future projects. This company also dabbles in making equipment used to harness renewable energy. This company not only uses its own expert staff, but also stays up to date on the latest knowledge by maintaining links with the Industrial University of Shahrud. It collaborates with academic institutions and exchanges knowledge with them too. Furthermore, this knowledge firm also uses capacities and resources made available by Semnon Tech Park. Among its services, it offers the execution of projects through contracting. For example, it has used its machines to complete piping and installation of telecommunications manholes for intercity networks. Another example is carving drainage systems in agricultural fields using its trenchers. Over the years, this company has made a variety of award-winning machines, such as drilling machines equipped with fiber optic lights. Moreover, this company has invented 6 products that have been internationally patented. This knowledge-based manufacturer has never stopped eyeing the future and has plans to expand its production units and product portfolio in the coming years. The company we just mentioned is part of the puzzle that helps Iran's mining sector thrive. It is one of Iran's key industries as the country is one of the top 10 mineral-rich nations globally. Roughly 7% of global mineral reserves can be found in Iran, making it one of the most important mineral producers in the world. Numbers from Iran's Trade Promotion Organization show that last year the sector saw a growth in exports. Government officials, however, say export figures could still be much higher. Furthermore, efforts have been placed on encouraging research and production in knowledge-based firms to increase specialized production, such as mining machines, in the market. And here is where knowledge-based companies play a big role. Okay, time for me to take a little break from here and divert your attention to a report that I made earlier in the week. Hey everyone, welcome to another special feature of Bazaar. Today we are discussing energy production, specifically electricity production through gas turbines and some of the problems that come with it. So in different times of the year, mainly during the summer, we get sporadic blackouts at peak hours, at one of the peak hours, let's say around 12 at noon until 4 to 5 p.m. Because we cannot store electricity, electricity production must always match electricity consumption. But because of the temperature during these hours, during this time of the year, during the summer, high temperatures in particular, negatively affect electricity production through gas turbines. So first we're going to take a look at, well, why that is and how gas turbines work. And also, we believe that we have found a solution at Sharif Innovation Center in one of the companies that has made that solution. And we're going to check that out too. Why do high temperatures negatively affect the performance of a gas turbine? Well, bear with me as I try to explain how a gas turbine works through this prototype that they have here. This is the prototype of the device that would be used at scale. This is not at scale. So imagine this is the gas turbine. How it works is that it sucks air through these air ducts, and the temperature of that air is very important. I'm going to get back to that. The air goes through a compressor here. The compressor compresses the air, which we would need the compressed air for the combustion chamber. A combustion chamber essentially makes this work exactly like a plane engine or a car engine. A car engine is slightly different because the movement that it produces is linear, whereas the plane engine has rotary movement. So that's exactly what it is like, because it produces rotary movement. So in the combustion chamber, we add a certain type of gas to the compressed air, and then a little spark creates an explosion, and the explosion, the high pressure air, would then spin our turbines. And the turbines, which have movement in them, are connected to a generator, and the generator's job is to turn movement into electricity, which goes through the power grid and then gets to whoever needs it. Now, the thing here, the important thing about the air temperature is that we need ideal conditions, ideally, for the machine to work at peak performance. And that ideal condition is at sea level 15 degrees Celsius. So the air, ideally, is 15 degrees Celsius, but we don't get that kind of temperature in a lot of places, especially in a hot and dry climate. So we have a couple of options to alleviate that problem. Number one, the inefficient option, is to work the compressor a lot more, which would use a lot more energy, but that's not even the issue. The issue is that there's a lot easier of a way. So what they have found at TEPCO company is that they have instead tried to use an ice storage unit to work as a thermal storage compartment, because the thermal storage capacity of ice is 100 times more than that of the water. So here they create ice essentially at midnight until the morning, when no one is using the power and the air is colder, because that is what happens. The difference between temperatures during the day and temperatures during the night in dry climates is pretty massive, so it's a lot easier to create the ice during that time. So they do that so that in the morning or at noon during peak hours, 12 p.m. to like 4 or 5 p.m., they have the ice to cool the water that is in the storage, and the cooled water goes through a radiator behind the air duct, so that the air, the probably hot air that comes through the chamber, is cooled using the water that is in the ice storage compartment. That water cools the air down to like 15 degrees and gives us ideal conditions to work with. So the compressor doesn't need to work that hard. We get our ideal conditions through the ice storage unit. And that is how they are able to offset the amount of electricity that we would lose if we were to use the compressor a lot harder. And that's pretty much how a gas turbine works as well, but also this is the innovation here. A better way to cool the air and get a gas turbine to work at peak performance. There are other less efficient methods of cooling the water that comes through the chamber. Both of them are called evaporative cooling. The first type is done through a wet media, most likely a cooling pad that you see in water coolers everywhere. So how it works is that there's a lot of surface and they run water through it, and the air is going to go through this cooling pad. So as the air goes through the cooling pad, the water absorbs the heat from the air and evaporates. Evaporation is an endothermic procedure, which is heat absorbing, which means that the heat is absorbed from the air and transferred to the water, which evaporates, making the air that runs through the cooling pad a lot cooler. This is a rather wasteful method because, well, you're using water, because in the method that I showed you, you don't use water. The water is just circulated back into the system. This one, you use water, and it's just generally not that efficient. The other method is even more inefficient. You see it in a lot of places in like outdoors restaurants. They spray water through the air that is going to go through the chamber, and the extremely tiny water droplets absorb the heat from the air and evaporate as they are sprayed. This also absorbs heat from the air, and that is why when you go through the spray of water, you feel a cool breeze because the air is a lot cooler, because its heat is transferred to the water molecules. So both of these methods are pretty inefficient, and I just wanted you to know about other methods that are used, but they are definitely more inefficient. And the chart is a demonstration of how our thermal storage system would perform in an actual 400 megawatt hour power plant system. When the ice is getting used during the in midday, it bumps up the production by a difference of 60 megawatts in a regular 400 megawatt hour power plant. All right, now it's time for me to take a little break here and hand it over to my good friend out in the field who's prepared a report for us.
In ancient Iran, felt was already used in the production of numerous kinds of clothing, bed clothes, floor carpets, and different kinds of sacks. In fact, the Iranian world may have been an important center for the development of felt technology. In the modern world today, felt or namat has found its way to industries of all kinds in various forms.
You just can't imagine how crowded this place is. Whenever I want to talk on the phone, I have to find a sign-up place to be able to talk to you. It's really crazy. God, in today's chaotic society, stress is an issue that many of us suffer from every day. But what matters most is trying to find the stress sources and try to find effective solutions. For this reason, today I'm here to tell you that I finally found a startup, a new innovative company that has finally found a solution to this disastrous problem. I won't tell you any further. Let's just go and check it out.
Felt, or so-called namat, is the acoustic solution for rowdy places to absorb and decrease undesirable noises. The aim is to provide sound serenity and to improve physical, mental, and psychological health. Namat Studio's scope of work is based on designing and manufacturing products. Recently, it has also played a significant role in different projects like some innovation centers in Asia and Africa. This company has focused on designing and building acoustic products. Generally in Iran, there is no specific competitor in this field. However, there are some groups in America and Northern Europe that are engaged with felt.
If I want to tell you about a history about how our company established, it goes back to 3 years ago when Diva was chosen to renovate the innovation factory of Iran, that was the biggest one in the time. And the designer tried to make the offices and they tried to design a place that the people be comfortable, have a good place to work. That's why we understand that we have some advantages and disadvantages. One of these disadvantages is about the sound pollution that we had in the this area, that places were noisy and the employees didn't like that. That's why we try to use special materials for control this sound pollution, and we reached the felt material and we try to use this material.
Designing acoustic and movable working stations with the aim of recycling old products and reuse them in different functions. What is worth noticing about this business is the fact that the problem-solution method is based upon three WH questions: why, how, and what. Why is to define the problem, how is the process towards the solution, and what is the final product and prototype. These acoustic solutions were combined with architecture in various parts of the space and played the role in sound insulation and creating a silent space.
All right, now I want to walk you through some of the major products that are made of felt. The first piece we have here is an artwork that is made of wool felt that acts as a sound-absorbing material, not only as an aesthetic material that you can put it in your home place, but also as a sound-absorbing material. There is this phone booth. If I get inside, I can feel the private space and how the atmosphere really changes. It improves the acoustic vibes and reduces the reverberation when I get inside. And there's this whole thing, we call it desk divider. It's actually one of the main products in this company. People in